Good afternoon. I'm Bree. I'm the CFO at the National Wood Flooring Association. I'm thankful to have this opportunity to be in front of a bunch of other people that are leaders in the hardwood industry. We'll talk a little bit later on about our Real Wood, Real Life campaign that I think a lot of you will hopefully find interesting. So today we're going to talk a little bit about benchmarking. As Isaac said, he didn't really have a lot of time to go into the how. It's going to be more a little bit about the why, and I have a few statistics that you might find interesting. And then at the end, we have an opportunity for some people to give some stories about their benchmarking. There we go. All right. Quick show of hands. How many people in the room currently benchmark or use benchmarking? Okay. I thought it would be more than that. So I was next going to say how many think they could improve their process. So I'd hope that that could be pretty much everybody in the room then. Yeah. We all can. Just like anything, we can always improve. I'd be happy today if each of you could take away one or two things today that they could use to make their benchmarking process better. So that might be motivation to improve your benchmarking process. That might be a new idea that you came up with from this presentation. Maybe just a question to ask an advisor or a friend, someone you trust. Or simply just getting the conversation going between each of you professionals on what you do in your industry about benchmarking. It's probably not surprising to hear that an accountant has a passion for benchmarking, but really that started about 3 years in for me. I was working as a controller for a company that implemented the values of The Great Game of Business. I'm not sure, is anybody here familiar with that book, The Great Game of Business? All right. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute. I'll give a kind of an example of what that means and how that relates to benchmarking. But for now, let's kind of step back a little bit and talk about the basics of what benchmarking is. So I'm here today because NWFA publishes a magazine, the Hardwood Floors magazine. The website's up here. And last June, we published an article that I had written on benchmarking. So you can go to the website there. You can find that article if you want to dig in a little more, or any other helpful articles. Also, of course, you could subscribe to the magazine. Anybody who's related to the hardwood industry, not necessarily flooring, can subscribe to our magazine for free. So in that article, I state the definition of benchmarking as the act of comparing a performance metric against a standard or trend. You can report any data at any point in time, but the problem is that the real value of it comes alive when you're comparing it analytically and find out what story it tells. A lot of people think that accountants just, you know, report on past data, and sometimes that's true. But if you start to see the trends and find the ways that that tells the story of what your business is doing, that's when the real value of benchmarking can come alive. So benchmarks aren't only financial, although they usually end up impacting financial results. Benchmarks could also be from operations, like customer satisfaction, for example. Metrics are compared to themselves over time to spot trends, or they can be compared to other entities within your own industry. As manufacturers, I would make a bet that many of you are paying attention to your profit margins. Have you identified your top financial operational key performance indicators, and have you tracked them on a dashboard? Do you track them regularly? Do you have regular meetings that you get together and pay attention to these numbers? Can you name at this point in time, if I was to ask each of you, what your top operational and financial benchmarks are and how they interrelate to each other? It's important to define those key performance indicators. KPI, for those that may not be familiar with that term, those are the few metrics that most greatly and quickly tell you whether or not your business is doing well. Are you looking at both leading and lagging indicators? Again, lagging indicators measure the past data, and they're important. They are an indicator for how healthy your business is doing. And they are also pretty easy usually to determine and report on. But then there are leading indicators that can tell you what's a sign for the future. And And those will help you be able to capitalize on any opportunities, maybe to invest more in something, buy into something, or maybe how you need to make changes in a downturn, you know, if you need to cut costs or that kind of thing. Are you uncertain if your in your business, if it might make sense to add a new technology? I know that John Forbes in our office, who's worked with a lot of the manufacturers here, has talked about different technology that you're putting into your businesses that are helping make you more and more efficient. Well, maybe some of you haven't implemented those technologies yet. You're not sure if that's really going to be helpful. Well, if you start tracking some of these benchmarks, you could really see how that might affect your profit margins if you put into place some of these new technologies. I interviewed a few people before this presentation, and I've heard is that the margins are just becoming more razor thin increasingly. And so really paying attention to these metrics is not becoming just something that's nice to have, nice to look at. It's really becoming a requirement to survive. For now, I'm going to go into that success story I talked about a minute ago with A Great Game of Business. In 1983, International Harvester was nearing bankruptcy. They were a company that remanufactured engines in Springfield, Illinois, or Missouri. The managers included the author of the book, Jack Stack. He wanted to save the facility, and at the time, the positions of 119 people that they employed. They pulled together $100,000 in cash and borrowed $8.9 million. The lender was watching them very closely. And the managers knew they had to meet the loan covenants exactly, or the loan would be called immediately. So they came up with the idea to determine what their most critical numbers were, their KPI, and they would post it regularly for all of the employees to see. They wanted everybody to be involved in the success of the business. They made it a game and the whole team effort. Their concept centered around opening the books to everyone. They also taught the employees how to read and understand what they were looking at, and to think like owners in a game where eventually they would be financially rewarded. In the beginning, it was simply to save their jobs. Over time, it became actual financial rewards and ownership within the company. So I'm not here today really to talk about open book management, although that's a big part of the success of their story, but really, the fact that they had to use those benchmarks and how that helped them make decisions and grow, that stuck through me throughout the years. It's also important to me that if you listen to your employees, they're going to uncover some of those operational metrics that are important. They might think of things or see things differently than some of the leadership might, that might be areas that they can you can improve within your business. Even small changes can yield large results when we're, you know, talking about a thinner margin. The game that they did in The Great Game of Business created excitement and a sense of ownership for everyone. They wanted to pay attention to the most important numbers, and they wanted to find ways to impact them. Some people get turned off when you think of business as a game, but it can be very effective, a way to affect change. Another show of hands here, since spring was yesterday. Who's excited and that it's finally spring and it's going to be baseball season here pretty soon? I know I am. St. Louis was especially cold year, winter this year, and we are already. I cannot believe that it's already 2 weeks until my softball season starts. I still play softball. So we're really excited about that in St. Louis and everywhere. But I can't think of really any other business or industry that uses benchmarking more than baseball. Many people pay attention to a player's batting average, their on-base percentage, an ERA. Tracking how many home runs a player has can allow management to add a dollar value to that player for their team. The same concept can be used for any business. So back to The Great Game of Business, not only did that save their company, but under the leadership, the company became SRC Holdings Corporation, and now they have 1,800 employees versus the 119 and over $600 million in annual sales. So really the power of benchmarking in this instance can't be denied. What gets measured gets done, and it saved their company. You probably can't read that. So I'll read it for you. It's a quote from Jim Evans. He's an MLB umpire. It says, game management is accomplished by staying constantly alert and then reading and reacting to potential problem situations before they materialize. It all boils down to paying attention to details. This quote spoke to me as it relates to the great game of business, of course, but also how benchmarking can benefit any area of life, whether it's business, baseball, or personal goals like your fitness. So this brings me back to the mechanics and the meat of what benchmarking is. To me, this takes us back to creating a dashboard for your KPI, and this is kind of a little bit of the how and how to work on your benchmarks so that you're looking at them regularly. So this is just an example. I think you guys are supposed to be getting these slides to be able to see this a little bit better. It's just an example of one dashboard that a company might use. Once you determine what your KPI are, you can get them presented in this format, and they become much easier to see quickly and then easier to view regularly. At NWFA, we are big fans of graphs like this to spot trends because they speak to all kinds of minds, whether you're financially minded or non-financially minded. We still offer the standard presentation at NWFA, but these tell the story in a way that doesn't get bogged down by a pile of numbers. I love numbers, and I still prefer to see them this way. With all the information available today, graphs and charts help the message get across more efficiently. Does anybody here use this kind of style of reporting or more of the... The other day, I was cleaning out something in the back at NWFA, and we found an old financial report that was literally this thick and all connected on the old dot matrix paper. And I'm not sure how anybody ever could use that to get any kind of story out of there, but we've come a long way. So here are just some types broken down to get you thinking about some different metrics that you might be able to use for your business. Some are standard, typical financial ratios. You probably all heard of it when you were required. If you're not an accounting person, you've at least probably been required to take a class and learn a little bit about some of those financial margins. That would include your gross profit margin. Some are more specific to your industry, like a price of oak for a sawmill. Those would all fall still under the financial section. Other metrics are operational. We already talked about the customer satisfaction or percentage of waste or throughput. That's where I feel like staff can really help because they can see what's going on at each area in your business to help kind of weed out the different operational statistics that eventually then lead to more financial gain. External metrics on the end, I think it's kind of hard to see on the end because of the light. That's going to include something that's very important, I think, for both the wood flooring and hardwood industry in general is housing starts. We look at that. That's important. Some of those statistics might be harder to find. It's not something you can easily control. But if you can figure out what those are and track them regularly, they can be a big leading indicator for your business. Just going to go over a couple examples at NWFA, things that we look at regularly. We do keep an eye on housing starts. We pay attention to the health and direction of our member companies. Of course, that's important since our revenues are primarily from dues, our annual expo, advertising our magazine, and education. Our success tends to lag our members' success, so we can pay attention to them and see how things are going to be for us over the next year. Our dashboard also includes something that I don't see a lot of people use, and that is a 12-month trailing profit and loss graph. So at any point in time, you can see what happened over the last 12 months. That helps to easily spot trends, any gradual changes in your profit and loss. You can start to see if something's plateauing much easier. And we as a nonprofit have to kind of look at our reserve balance as well. That's something that we have. And just like your personal finances, we try to keep about 6 months of our expenses in that reserve. So those are some of the things that we look at. In preparation for this talk, I pulled a Dun & Bradstreet first research report on the wood product manufacturing industry. It was dated January 14th, 2019, so it's not too old. I hesitated to include some of it just because it's kind of bogged down in detail, but thought that this might be a good value add, especially for those of you who are benchmarking thoroughly and have a system going really well already. It included several industry indicators, and if anybody's interested in seeing more of this report, feel free to contact me. I just highlighted a few that I thought might be interesting for you all. U.S. durable goods manufacturer shipments of wood products, an indicator of demand for wood products, rose 3.7% year-to-date from October 18 to 17. That's the first one. I don't want to read over all of them, but again, there was probably a page or two of these listed in that report. That could be a good example of a report you could get to help you with your leading indicators for your business. It also had a section for company, like company-specific ones that you can track. There were over 30 benchmarks, and they had them listed out for all the different sized entities. So if you're large, medium, small, I just listed the average that they had. According to that report, the gross margin for the whole industry was 22.8% over that time frame. So is that something that's critical to you to track? Are you below, way ahead of that? Do you want to know why? Those are the type of things you can track against and put plans in place to see if you can meet some of those targets. So you might want to look for similar resources that may be available to you. We actually got this report from our CPA, our outside CPA that does our audit. They're the ones that had access to this report. So maybe you have a CPA or financial advisor you work with that has access to this. That those people might also be good at getting benchmarking ideas. Maybe you don't have a CPA that you employ, so you can use them to get some ideas for what you might want to do and look at. Associations, NWFA or HMA maybe, or other networks that exist to support your success. NWFA offers some market reports for our members, the Catalina Report, some different reports that we offer. If you're a member, you can see those. You might be able to read through those and get some of those statistics. These groups also, of course, can be a way to support the health of your industry, which is very important and critical to your success. You don't have benchmarks if we are losing people to fake wood in the instance of NWFA. So I'm going to take the opportunity while I'm here in front of you all to just give you a heads up on what NWFA is doing for the Real Wood, Real Life campaign, since that applies to your industry as well. We created a mass of resources designed to tell consumers about the benefits of wood flooring and real wood in general. We chose the tagline Real Wood, Real Life so that the logo and many of the tools can be used for any application of wood. It doesn't have to be for wood flooring. We're invested in the health of all of it. So we want to encourage everybody to go out to our website and download the tools, use them, promote them, hashtag Real Wood, Real Life. We continue to meet with other associations like yours and others to kind of do as much joint marketing as we can to promote the use of real wood. So this slide here shows the logo up there, if you can see that, and the handbook that we made for our consumers promoting the use of real wood, and our toolkit for our members to show them how they can use the logo and what they can do to promote real wood. Right here, we've got a little bit more of that, the logo. Again, digital and print ads that can be used. These are for anybody. Fact sheets, trade show graphics, media outreach templates. And then there's also a webinar out on our website that can be viewed that talks about this campaign and what we're doing and how we want to encourage people to promote real wood. So with that, you probably can't read that from way far in the back. It says, if you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the results of 100 battles. So to me, this quote means that knowledge is power. So many people are afraid of benchmarks or afraid of budgets because they think that means they're constricted or they don't want to see what the results are. But really, once you take control of that and take control of the benchmarks, then all the future battles become less scary. doesn't have to be perfect from the beginning. Just get started. Just find one thing if you're not doing anything at all. It can change over time. They can evolve over time. They may evolve over time. You might find that once you fine-tune one area, you then move on to another area of focus, or the industry changes and you're forced to look at something different. Adjustments to the process don't mean it's a failure or that it's worthless. It means that they show that you have a drive to survive by not failing to accept change, basically. Determine what success and security look like for each of you, and then use the benchmarking as a tool to achieve that. With that said, I'd like to give it, I know that there might be a few people in the audience that have some examples of the way they're using benchmarking within their business, and then this would also be the time for questions if anybody has any of those.
Yes, one of the things that I'm supposed to do is stand up and share a little of our experience. Four others in our leadership team take a look at those key performance indicators, and a couple of things that are in there are what our production was over the 12 months prior, and our cost per thousand, and watching what the trend is in our cost per thousand each year. It's not quite as elaborate as the graphs, but I think we're gonna wanna take a look at getting a little bit more visual with that. Another thing that we do in is that we actually try to measure the profitability of each deck of logs that we saw, and some of that is perspective because obviously you didn't sell that lumber yet, but each deck we analyze again with that leadership team that we have, and I think the third tool that we use is the HMA's wage and benefit survey and the tools that are along with that because. We like to see if we're competitive or not in the industry, and if we're not competitive, we better figure out how we can be. And I think we're going to start working on that, aren't we? We do it now for the HMA every 3 years, and we're going to try to improve it every time. But we use both the wage data to help benchmark our wages. If we have to move them one way or the other, we like everybody to at least be competitive within our industry, and then we also use the cost tools and margin tools that we put in there too. So just wanted to share that a little bit with y'all.
Yeah, we use those same tools, and again, Frank Miller, we really kind of with Bob there, I mean, if you've ever seen one of his spreadsheets, you know that he's got every piece of information back to the history of time, I think. But again, we use all kinds of different metrics. We have a weekly scorecard. We have a monthly scorecard. And we do benchmarking from all different metrics. But the one that I really want to challenge everybody about and what I'm trying to put in place at Frank Miller is how many people do budgets every year? How many people measure against the budgets every year? How many people think that's a waste of time to measure against budgets every year? Because really what you should be doing is, again, looking at your benchmarks, and that should be your strategic planning session, and all your goals and metrics should be analyzed against that versus a budget. A budget's a budget. Again, most of us do it in October, November time frame of the year before, and we know that they're all wrong. And again, it's just your perception at the time of where you're at. And we consistently have to explain what's different today than it was back when we put the budget together. So we've actually, for the first time this year, we don't talk about budgets. We talk about targets, and then we do a quarterly forecast. So I'll update the forecast every quarter, and we analyze forecast, and then against the target, and then that's what all our strategic plan is how am I going to get to the target. So just a thought for everybody there. Like I said, I used to work at GM, and we did all kinds of benchmarking, and one of them was trying to get away from budgets. Budgets really are a waste of time for everybody, but everybody likes to see them. Because they're a piece of paper that says, well, you said you were going to make this kind of net income for me. And we all know that there's 1,000 variables put into that. So that's just a thought, an idea for everybody.